We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. You can call now and leave a message at 905-529-7165 and check out their website at andyanddon.com. That's andyanddon, all one word, .com. You can listen to old archive shows there and ask a question via the listener inquiry button. Good morning, gentlemen. Great to see you. You're thawed out and all that sort of stuff.
Good morning.
That's right.
A decade of change. Yes. Is that what it's been for the last little while?
Well, you go back. What was the date 10 years ago? Pretty simple question. It was
recession.
January 2009. And we were in the throes of, there wasn't a positive headline anywhere, particularly about the stock market, but also for that matter, the real estate market too. Real estate went down, plummeted actually at that time, but went down about 15-20% for anybody had to sell then.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that because I had a couple clients, unfortunately, had closings, and it was not unconditional the sale of their house. They had to sell their house, and they had to take a lower price because nothing was moving.
Yeah, there was a few people that, when they went back and even later, said, no, this is way overpriced.
Yeah.
And got out of deals or you know, refinanced them.
Yeah, you think on a million-dollar property, you could get a 10% haircut on the price, that's $100,000. You'd probably be willing to pay your lawyers another $20,000 just to get out of the million-dollar deal.
Good point.
Yeah, for sure. And it was just so much, everybody was just basically scared.
Yeah.
And holding onto their wallets tight, okay? Mm. And certainly, the last thing anybody wanted to do would be to invest money. Mm-hmm. The market was down. Oh, let's see. At that time, it just came off of 2008, and it was down 35% the year December 31st, 2008.
Great time to invest.
Well, yes, but boy, was it hard. It, you know, in retrospect, it's, wow, I wish I invested then.
Yeah.
Well, let's fast forward 10 years now. We just had a little bit of a dip in the last quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, you know, market was down about 6% in December. And it was actually up a little bit in November and down a tiny bit in October. So the last quarter, call the U.S. stock market, was down about 6-7% in the last quarter. Actually, the whole year was flat up till that point, and the last quarter went down. So yeah, it wasn't a great quarter. So what should investors do when the market was down? Probably think about maybe rebalancing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great time to rebalance. So if you're rebalancing,
sell everything and park it.
Wait till it gets better.
Put it on the sidelines and park it. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because rebalancing, first of all, would be to sell the fixed income part of your portfolio and buy the equities.
Yeah.
Because the equity portion would have gone down a bit and you need to rebalance it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how hard it is to sell the one doing well to buy the one that's doing lousy?
Yeah.
Especially when, and this is why I said the decade of change, we have not forgotten about 2008, 2009.
Hmm.
It's like yesterday.
Yeah.
That 10 years went by, boom, gone. And now you see a little bit of a flutter in the markets. And there's all, you know, there's always a reason. Mm-hmm. This one has a lot to do with the current president and all the tariffs and et cetera, what's going on there. And what happened? Massive flow to cash.
Mm.
Massive flow. So far this year, $2 billion went into money market funds. In the last quarter of last year, $190 billion went to money market funds. Now, where did all this money come from? Well, maybe it just came from their bank accounts. No, $100 billion came from equities.
Mm.
Okay? People sold off the equities to buy the cash. And how often have we talked about the idea of, you know, the markets do drop. It's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. Every so often you have a negative year. And in fact, if any time, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is a great time to buy more. But what do people do? It comes back no matter how, you know, kind of educated people are. It's interesting. Human nature starts to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this could be another 2009 or 2008. What to do now?
Mm.
You know what? I'm going to park it. And that's what has been happening. So it's interesting. In the last 31 years in the Toronto stock market, there has been 11 negative years. Okay, in that period of time. So, you know, it's it's only 10 negative years. So approximately 1 in 3 years is negative. And had you just put it in, you would have got about 6.5% rate of return. Okay, nothing earth shattering, but you'd be okay. So let's say you put in $100,000 into the Toronto stock market in 1988. and you simply left it, didn't do a thing, and you rode through these ups and downs, you never rebalanced, it's all 100% equities, by the end of it, you would end up with $649,000 in 31 years. Not bad. You know, not too bad, too off, say, buying a $100,000 house mm-hmm. in 1988.
Right.
And you'd probably be worth upwards to maybe $500,000 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what if you did something different? And I thought, I wonder what happens, because I'm looking through all these little red lines of negative years. What if you say, okay, after a negative year, I'm selling and I'm not going to get back into the market for 1 year, and then I'll get back in, unless it was a negative year the next year, and then I'll wait another year.
Hmm.
So I said, okay, what happens if, so in 1988 was a positive 7%, so you put your 100 grand in, it went up 7, and then 89 was another 17% up. Well, then 1990, it was down 18%. So then you take all your money out, kind of like people are doing right now,
yeah.
Stick it in a 1% kind of holding tank, wait a year, and the next year, of course, it went up 8%, and you buy. Funny enough, you buy after it's gone up, it goes down 5%. So then you pull it out again, you wait a year. Oh, you missed the 29% year when you wait a year that time by parking it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, then it goes down 2.5%. What ends up happening is you keep selling low, of course.
Yeah.
So that same 100,000 over that 31-year span.
It seems a lot of work, too.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, that's the other
part.
You have
that much attention to it all.
Oh, and it's funny, the only time people get attention to this kind of stuff, to be honest, is when it's got a negative year.
Yeah, when it's bad.
Because they weren't doing a whole lot. You hardly had any kind of murmur.
Mm-hmm.
And really, last year wasn't a terrible year. It was absolutely, it's not a great year. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants negative, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
So you look at it, and so that same person, instead of having $649,000, by parking it for a year and then buying in after the year, just to make sure the market's going up, because
right.
you want to make sure things are okay. Well, that really means, when you say I'm waiting for things to be okay, really means I'm waiting for it to go up, and I'm going to miss that opportunity of the uptick, mm-hmm. and I'll buy in after it goes up.
Yeah.
Okay, but it feels better,
mm-hmm.
because, oh, at least it's going up. And this is always...
How can it feel better, though, when you have it explained to you like that?
Well,
what's yeah. good about it?
Not much.
At what point do you start feeling better?
Well, and this is where I'm looking at a lot of these commercials and kind of do-it-yourselfers.
Yeah.
This is the time they need some hand-holding, because they are absolutely, people are pulling money out of those, you know, those self-funded, I'm talking to a non-educated, a non-financial planner at the other end, and he's making a purchase or she's making a purchase for me, and I'm saving some fees.
Yeah.
Well, you know how much it costs to save those fees?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're missing the big rises, because they are taking it at the wrong time. So instead of $650,000 approximately, you would end up with $143,000 by doing that over and over again. And how much did it cost you for parking it? $505,000. So instead of getting 6.5%, you end up getting 1.2% return on your money.
Mm-hmm.
What a massive difference. And this is an emotional reaction. Now, again, you hit the nail on the head, Scott. I said it feels better. It feels good as soon as you say, you know what, that's it. I'm out of the market for a year. I'm just going to wait. But then it doesn't feel good when it goes straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened so far this year? Well, we just went through, it ended on Tuesday, but we went through 12 straight days on the Toronto stock market of up days.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, I don't know.
I think 6%, 6.5% up.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, that's how much was lost in December.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those ones that sold in December after it went down 6%, then missed the 6% increase in 12 straight days.
Yeah.
And this is human nature. And this is why there's this behavior gap that people, it's just so hard to manage your own money. You really
and
need
people
a financial
think
planner.
They're that, and God bless them if they are, if people think they're that smart to manage their own money, why would they have requested the services of a financial planner in the first place? Because that's sort of what it's to alleviate all of this, so you don't have to watch this.
Yeah, I kind of
worry about it and decide when you should be doing what you're doing.
You're absolutely right, and but then there's a bit of a greed factor comes in. Says, well, I mean, is it really worth that extra 0.5% I'm paying my financial advisor to do this? Is it really worth it? I could probably do it myself, and it's always easy to manage upswings in the market.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, when the market goes straight up, I don't see people selling the equities to buy the safe investments like bonds.
Yeah.
because that's the greed factor.
Might go higher.
It might go higher. Mm-hmm. I might be selling the wrong time.
Yeah.
You probably will be. We don't even know when the right time is. In history, we can see when the right times were. It's so easy back looking in the rearview mirror and saying,
nice graph.
Yeah, beautiful. I should have sold there and bought there. Simple. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's not that easy. There's no bells that go off. Nothing happens. So it's simply a matter of doing the right thing and rebalancing. I don't mean every time you see a little bump, but once a year, sometimes there's no real change in a year, so you wait another year. But when there's a big swing like we saw this year, that's a great time to rebalance up or down.
Mm-hmm.
Selling those equities after they had a 28% year to move it to bonds that had like a 2% year, nobody wanted to do that either.
Yeah.
That's the greed side. So this past week, they talked about trying to find what's a good defense for those retirees that are affected, and they need an income, and they're drawing. Mm-hmm. They're drawing on their investments. And this is, they've got some extra risks. If you're just accumulating money, it's no problem.
Yeah.
Accumulating money, you ride through this. But we've talked about that sequence of return risk, because after a year like last year, probably not a good idea to be selling equities when they're down.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the sequence of return risk is. Also, you can't put it in GICs because you're not going to beat inflation, and people are living too long.
Yeah.
So you got inflation risk and longevity risk. So you need to have a balanced portfolio and stick to the plan. So with everything going on with the trade war, slower sales in China, interest rates, and whatever the latest tweet was, okay, and there's you can't go a day without something going on down south of our border. All those uncertainties are affecting the market, and likely I would suspect 2019 will be volatile. Where we'll end up in 2019, nobody knows. But it's a great time to review your asset mix. And right now, it may be an idea to sell fixed income and buy equities. But also, there's a lot of products now. I know we offer them. It's managed products. So they have this package of different asset classes, and they move it around for you. It takes that emotion out so that you don't have to have, boy, should I sell now? Should I? You've got an expert overseeing the whole pot. So that equities right now, he or she may be buying more equities right now.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm leaving that decision for him because that's their job. Really, they study this stuff forever.
Yeah.
And every day is all about trying to get the best return with the least amount of risk for our clients. And so these managed products have done very well. And I really recommend clients should be reviewing their overall plan right now. Seek a financial advisor and at least have a second opinion. Make sure they're doing the right thing.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. 905-529-7165. You can call now and leave a message. We're coming right back. We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. And you can call them now. Leave a message at 905-529-7165 as well. Don't forget the website, andyanddon.com. You can listen to old shows there and ask a question via the listener inquiry button. All right, we're going to talk about taxes.
Tax vigilance.
Yes.
You know, whether you're a high net worth individual, whether you are just getting started, tax vigilance is something that is common at every level.
What is that? What do you mean?
It just in terms of how can I save tax? How can I reduce tax? And, and all the tax strategies around minimizing tax, because I think you might say, oh, well, only the rich want to really save tax. But at the same time, everybody at every level needs to be vigilant about tax and minimizing tax. And sometimes, it's funny, those small things can add up. And it might be as simple as just meeting with a client in the last couple of weeks when we were just discussing bank fees. And we sort of looked through transactional records of their bank account to look at how much were they paying to actually operate their bank account. And so there was a monthly cost of $7.95, unless you kept a minimum of $5,000 or something like that. And at the same time, then on top of that, there was $1.50 charges if you didn't make an ATM withdrawal from your institution, if you did it from a third-party institution.
Right.
We started adding it all up, and I said, you could switch to a different bank and eliminate all of these fees. And would probably, I think we worked it out, save you about $250 a year. And, you know, but the pain of somehow moving that to become that, to save that money, it just seemed like I'll just pay the price. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when it comes to tax planning, a lot of times we're just, we get lazy or we're just not motivated to make the changes necessary to save those small amounts. But it's the small amounts that over time that really add up.
Yeah.
Right? They accumulate and you know, we just get used to it. And if it was a bill rather than trying to save tax,
yes,
I think people would treat it differently.
Yeah,
you had to pay it. Literally, like write a check for it.
Like a parking ticket.
Yeah.
Okay, we got this ticket, but if you do this, you don't have to pay this ticket.
Yeah.
Then people might think differently.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm going to come full circle back to what Don was talking about earlier about where we are historically and 10 years ago. And it reminds me of a story when, and well, so we flash back to, let's say, December 2008. And that was at the sort of, not the peak, but because March 9th, 2009. So that's coming up in March 9th, 2019 will be 10 years since the absolute bottom of the market.
Right.
So, in December 2007, so we're going back about 15 months prior to the actual bottom of the market, a client called me and said, I'm thinking I want to change my risk profile from being aggressive to being moderate or conservative. I'm just, something, it just doesn't seem right. Like, you know, the, like almost like he had a crystal ball that the market was going to go down. So I said, that's fine. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball that's any clearer than yours, but ultimately you have to be comfortable with your risk profile. And so I said, let me work through the numbers. And we calculated, in order to sell what he had and move to something more conservative, the capital gains tax was going to be about $20,000 on the portfolio. And so when I got back to him with that information, this is December 2007, he said, oh, 20 grand. Well, let's just wait a while. So nothing happened. Conversations go on into the next year, into 2008. And by the fall of 2008, when things actually, the financial crisis had begun, by the end of the first quarter, I got a call. Geez, you know what? I think I should sell now. I got to get out. And the market had already dropped by probably about 25% at this point. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm on the offense saying, you know what? You don't want to sell when it's down.
Yeah.
You don't want to sell when
you
it's down.
It. Yeah.
So now about every 10 days, 2 weeks, I get a call saying, I've got to get out. I've got to get out. I talk him off the cliff. He stays in the portfolio. Finally, I didn't hear from him for a couple of months, and on March 8th, the day before the absolute bottom of the market, he says, he calls me up, he says, I can't take it anymore. Sell everything. I'm going to move into cash, and when things settle down, I'll buy back in. And I thought to myself, wow, how typical is that of a scenario where people get handcuffed about making a decision on their asset allocation or their comfort level with risk because he wasn't prepared to pay the 20 grand of capital gains tax to change to a more conservative portfolio, which in hindsight would have, who knew, but would have actually saved him money in the long run because he made two mistakes. One was selling out at the bottom. And then from that point on, everything just went straight up.
Yeah.
So there was no way that he got back in at any higher point down the road. And so psychology, and it's funny because somebody had asked me the question, you know, how difficult was it to keep people from selling during periods of and when there's a down cycle like we just saw at the end of December? And I said, you know, surprisingly, my motivation to keep people from selling is very powerful. I've got a lot of examples I can use, and usually I can talk people off the cliff and stop them from selling. And I said, well, that's interesting. But I said, but the most disappointing thing is I wish I was better at convincing people to add more money, invest when it's down.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to say, you know, stick with what you've got because it will turn and it'll come back. Mm-hmm. But to get you to go
add
out,
to it,
but to get you to go out and go into your pocket and actually give me more money and invest at those low points is always been the most challenging. And I don't know if that's an industry thing or just, you know, me in particular, but I found that there's a lot of skill set around trying to manage the emotions around buying when things are down like that.
Yeah, and no question, Andy, I agree. It's one thing is keeping what you got and saying, okay, I'll ride this out. But now keeping what I got plus adding more, I might just lose more.
Yeah.
And so absolutely.
It's like driving towards the edge of a cliff and speeding up.
Yes, exactly. And that, in the mind of the potential client or the clients, absolutely. But in reality, that we're the only business this happens. When I go to outlet malls and it's 80% off, and boy, they love outlet malls.
There's a lineup.
There's a lineup there. Now, not 80% off even, but.
It works for Walmart.
It works for Walmart. You know, everybody loves to save money when it comes to buying a product. But unfortunately, for some reason, investments don't seem to be a product. And what you're actually buying, you have to remember what you're buying. When you're buying a stock, and let's say Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Apple or Royal Bank or even Investors Group for that matter, you're buying a company. And it's simply a betting game every day. What is this company worth? Now, is Coca-Cola worth less now? Are they selling a lot less Coke? Possibly. During a recession, they do. But are they going to do well down the road? I think Warren Buffett loves that one because that's one of his bigger holdings. Mm-hmm. And so riding it out, if you think of it as I'm buying a product, I'm buying Coca-Cola. I'm not only buying the can of Coke, I'm actually buying the whole company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're buying it 25% off during this particular recession, or actually in the 08, it was more like 35 or 40% in the Dow, the S&P 500 or Dow Jones. So. But we don't look at that. What we simply do is look at our statement and these dollar signs going down. And you forget what you're actually getting. And you simply say, my portfolio is down and I'm going to add more to my losses. I'm going to throw more of my money into this thing going down. You forget that you're buying units. You're buying units of companies all over the world that have a track record to weather all these storms eventually. But nobody knew March 9th was going to be. It's not like the bells all of a sudden went off. In fact, March 9th, I remember it distinctly because it was a black page on the paper. Instead of white,
I remember that.
You know, instead of a white paper with black writing, it was a black page with white writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the end is nowhere in sight.
Yeah,
we can't see this ever changing. We don't know when. It's not close to us yet. It's still going to go down. Yeah. It started going up the next day.
Yeah.
And nobody knew that.
You know, in retrospect, thinking, could I convince people to take money out of their savings or out of their pocket, or even people will borrow money, but to invest when things are that low is very difficult. And what you were talking about earlier, Don, was just revisiting what we call your asset allocation model. And so you may have had, in simple terms, if you had a portfolio that was 50% stocks and 50% bonds during a period like we just saw in December, or during a period like way back in 2009 and 8, where even though we may not have convinced you to give us more money at the time, if we could at least have convinced you to rebalance your portfolio, the allocation of your portfolio. Because if you think about a 50-50 mix, if stocks went down 30%, that 50% now it's gone down 15%.
Yeah.
So now you're down at 35%, and now you've got 65% of bonds. So if we at least just convinced you to sell 15% of your bonds, your existing money, and reallocate that to the stocks so that you went back to your 50-50 mix, you would have been, it would have been a good service done because the resulting, at the end of the day, the resulting returns would have been enhanced and really helps in terms of your long-term rates of return.
Because you're able to buy more units with the same amount of money and those units in 2009, and this is the calendar year, January 1st to December. This isn't buying it right at the low. But if you said January 1st, I'm buying, and it continued to go down for 2 months, 9 days later, 2009, the market went up 30.7%. So any money you put in January 1st would have gone up 31%. Talk about a great way to enhance your returns.
Exactly.
And this is what rebalancing does. It takes advantage of these dips, but psychologically. Adding more to the pile.
Selling the good stuff and buying the bad stuff.
And it's very tough to go through this. And this is why, again, this is what exactly Andy and I have done for years, going on to, I don't know, 30, 67 years combined. Yeah. It's we've seen this before. And as much as it is easy to say, okay, I'm just going to buy this ETF or index fund or do it myself or Quest Trade or whatever, and they claim that 1/3 of your retirement will be lost in fees, I love to see the clients to hang in there for all that through thick and thin with nobody actually talking to them.
Yeah.
Okay, because I haven't seen that person. with us talking to them, we still have the odd one escape our grips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they still leave. Yeah. And they still, and they said, I had two, interesting enough, Andy, that sold on March 9th.
Wow.
I had five leave me during that time.
Yeah.
Two on the worst day. I couldn't hold on to them any longer. I was down to holding their fingernails, and they just, unfortunately, that was the day they sold, and they've never recovered.
Yeah.
They never recovered.
No.
They put it in GICs, and they have lived a different life because of it, because they weren't wealthy before, and who knows, they may have run out of money.
Yeah.
They were on track, though. I remember the plans. They were on track to be able to live to 100 and never run out of money, and that plan still would have been 100% intact had they held on.
Did you ever call them back a few days later?
A few
How you
a year
now?
Later,
yeah.
Well, we're not one to rub it in, but at the same time, we don't know.
No, but I don't mean to rub it in. But even there's the lesson.
Yeah,
I mean there's the lesson.
And and we don't even know. Even a few days later, after it goes up a few days, it's so volatile. Is it really going up, or is it going to go back down again?
Yeah.
And nobody really knows.
It takes at least a while before you realize in hindsight that what would have been the right decision.
It's a trend. Yeah.
I did have one client. I got to say that back by September. They did buy back in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they said it was a mistake. We know we didn't listen to you. It's our fault. They were in the States and Florida. So whatever the news they heard in Canada was nothing compared to being in Florida.
Yeah.
Their papers and media were even worse.
Yeah.
By far. Because most of the trouble started in the U.S.
Yeah.
So they just called and they got scared. They did buy back in September. And fortunately, they did because they resumed. They missed a lot of the uptick, but they didn't lose all of it, and they were able to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy that they did.
I think this comes back to a lot of the value of working with a financial planner on your plan, your retirement plan, your tax plan, on all of your finances. And when you think about, you were mentioning that commercial that we've been talking about, where the company touts that you could have 30% more money because you would pay less fees. And I think the commercial is something around where the person says, the advisor says, yeah, but you would miss out on the professional advice that I give you. And the client says, you mean the 10-minute meeting that we have once a year? And I thought to myself, well, that is so telling.
Yeah.
Because if all you're getting is a 10-minute meeting once a year to review your finances, then you shouldn't be paying the additional fees because there's no way that that is going to translate into future growth or net worth for you in terms of your financial security. So, that
means you have the wrong planner.
You do. The advice to listeners out there is if you're getting a 10 or 15 minute once a year review and appointment, then you definitely should be looking at getting a second opinion on all of this.
And there's certain value to advice. And it's interesting. I love our new commercials, IG Private Wealth Management, because they actually go over all the little ticks that we do is follow the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And a PFP, personal financial plan, goes through everything. What is your chance, your probability of success in retirement? What about sequence return risk? What about kids' education, your house, paying that off? Every box is ticked. And it's exactly what we do. I got to say, a little commercial for IG Private Wealth right now, but the commercials, in my opinion, weren't that good prior. Mm-hmm. I think they're fantastic now because they actually show what we do.
Yeah.
And we're sitting with clients for 2 hours going through data collection, putting all this in, giving scenarios of how to improve their situation, how to save tax, how to increase their net worth. And we're not talking by a little. I had this conversation with a client last week. She was a GIC person all their life. And she's like, wow, look how well I did. And she did very well. She had a very high net worth. But what they don't see is how well they could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that could have done would have been at least double.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see on that example I did earlier, and this time it was five times more money getting because of just letting it sit in the market rather than trying to guess the market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in that scenario I used. But we've shown this many times. If you just miss 31 days, you lose half the return.
Absolutely. Well, even and estate planning, which is another component of this.
Absolutely.
And actually, I was reminded because last week I was talking about what happens when you die.
Yeah.
And during the week, I had an appointment with an executive at Arbor Funeral Services. And I said to him, you know, I just did a whole section on the radio talking about when you die. And we were talking about funeral homes and funeral services. And I said, it was interesting to me that if you donate your body to science, then you don't have to worry about funeral services because the institution, whether it's the school, they'll come and pick your body up and then there's no funeral costs. And he said, you know, that's true, except you have to have a plan B. And I go, what do you mean you have to have a plan B? A lot of times they reject your body.
So what, they have to come over and kick the tires first?
That's right.
Nah, we don't want this.
Wait a minute. There's a little tick box and checklist to see, should we actually take this guy? I'm not so sure.
The ultimate rejection.
No, I'm dead and nobody wants my body.
Yeah, even science isn't interested. Even to say how you could have done it differently or maybe better. No, we don't want that.
No, sorry.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. We're coming back. We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. You can call them now and leave a message. They'll return your call at 905-529-7165. And don't forget their website, andyanddon.com. There you can listen to old archive shows or ask a question via the listener inquiry button. We're talking about an interesting piece that came out this week in regard to how close we are to bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And the number was like $200.
Yeah, $200. How many people in Canada are $200 away from being bankrupt or insolvency? They can't afford their bills.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a startling number, 46%.
Wow.
And that, to me, is shocking that people are cutting that fine. Their bills and their debt payments are that close that they are literally running $200. So if prices increase by another $200 at the end of the month, they can't afford it.
Yeah.
They're done. They're that close every single month. And now, having said that, this isn't new. It wasn't exactly good before this new report came out. So at the end of September, it was 40%.
Mm-hmm.
So 40% were within $200 of being insolvent.
Mm-hmm.
In one quarter, it's jumped to 46%.
Just maybe the increase in interest rates was enough to do.
Yeah. A little bit of increase in interest rates. There's been 5 interest rate rises since 2017.
Yeah.
And this was pretty, like, this wasn't a secret this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the finance ministers were talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
They're going on, get prepared for higher interest rates. They changed the mortgage rules. Mm-hmm. They did everything to try to warn people.
Although I did hear a report last week from one of the banks that their 5-year fixed rate mortgage went down.
Yes, yes, they did. And
how do you explain that?
Well, they actually are saying they may curb interest rate rises right now because the economy is kind of not sure which way it's going.
Right.
Perhaps the tariffs, and there's lots of things going on, as we all know.
And I think part of that being a 5-year rate,
five-year bonds
and long-term bonds, that level, that area of the interest rate curve has actually come down a bit, but the short-term rates have continued to rise.
Right.
So, there's no reductions in the short-term rates.
Right.
They've still been rising. That long-term rate came down a little bit.
Right.
So they dug into this just a little bit further and said 31% of people don't make enough to cover their bills and debt payments. And that was a 7% increase from September. Mm. So already they don't make enough.
Wow.
31%. So call it a third of Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. The third of Canadians aren't making enough money to cover their bills right now. And it was already bad at about a quarter, 25% prior to this in September. So there really is no wiggle room. And 45% are basically going into debt right now every month just to get by.
Yeah.
And probably my biggest pet peeve, as you know, Scott, you're probably going to mouth the words as I say them, is those payday loans.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely can't stand those things because that's what they prey on. They can't get credit elsewhere. So instead of going bankrupt and trying to get into a position that they can afford these or even go to their creditors and ask for a deal of some sort.
Help out, yeah.
They go to a payday loan service thinking it's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a debt spiral that I can guarantee you're not going to get better doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's no end in sight. The only one going to get rich on that are the payday loan companies.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I looked at this a little further, it was kind of interesting. And I was shocked at the same time. Where do you think the worst provinces were in terms of insolvency rates, or in other words, the most affected in the last quarter?
I would say BC.
Alberta.
That's a good one, too.
And I thought Alberta because of the oil. Right. That came to me. In fact, BC and Alberta didn't even come into it, so they must have been okay.
Oh.
Funny enough. it was Saskatchewan and Manitoba.
Hmm.
Saskatchewan does have oil, too.
Okay? Yeah.
It does, just because the border's there doesn't mean it stops, right? But Manitoba, I've never heard anything. And they're the worst, 56%, where that $200 would put them over the top. 56%. That's an 8% increase since September. Alberta was next at 48%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, they went up 8% also. BC was not on the list. Quebec and Ontario were 46%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they had gone up. Ontario went up 6% in the last quarter, and Quebec went up 5%. This was the real shocker. Atlantic Canada. They were 45%, and their insolvency rate actually went down 4%. They were doing the best.
Hmm.
When's the last time you said Atlanta Canada is doing the best financially? Okay.
The best savers?
Maybe
more
they're
responsible?
Saving. Oh, maybe their ups and downs. They're a little more used to it,
more
perhaps.
More retirees.
Yeah.
They're the whole industry of fishing, et cetera. Maybe they're more used to the ups and downs and they're safe. They don't live at the same standard of living. Yeah. The cost of living is definitely less.
Or they might
have
less debt. Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, there's a lot of things. So it came to another study then. And it says, why don't people save money? They know this stuff. It's not like you got some really intelligent people that are getting themselves in financial trouble. And they thought they actually found psychologically there might be a personal conflict of saving for yourself. It's almost like you're being greedy for yourself. You got your family's future. You got other people to look after, maybe giving a gift to your parents. I'm going to save for myself. And it actually goes against our human nature of wanting to help out our families and instead of just helping out ourselves. So this is why getting a pre-authorized check is a way to go. Having an automatic payment, because we have no problem in buying a car, okay, for ourselves, making the payments on that car, and every month we make that payment, no problem at all. But for some reason, savings doesn't click in. And honestly, they went through 2,000 people on this survey and to try to find an idea of what makes them tick. It's quite an interesting study. At the end of the day, how much better off was somebody with a pre-authorized check, percentage-wise, than somebody just try to do it themselves?
I'd say 50%.
You're only 100% off. It was 152%.
Wow.
Which is shocking. So here's another added value that a financial planner does is to make sure you start on a savings schedule. If we can get you to save monthly, you're 152% higher in terms of the amount you're going to save. Hmm. And that's half the battle right there.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. 905-529-7165. You can call now and leave a message and check out the website at andyanddon.com. We're coming right back. We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox are here from IG Private Wealth Management. You can call now and leave a message. They'll return your call at 905-529-7165. And check out the website, andyanddon.com. That's andyanddon, all one word, .com. There you can listen to old shows and ask a question via the listener inquiry button. We're talking about winter weddings. Who's going down the aisle? Who's getting married here?
Oh, it's a new
thing. Winter weddings.
Could you imagine last weekend? That would have been a little bit cold.
That's those, a real winter
those
wedding.
Pictures would have parkas on.
Bring out the hot chocolate and schnapps.
Yeah. Are winter weddings cheaper?
Well, I don't know. Mm. Maybe. It could be, if you're going south.
That's an idea.
Well, destination weddings are a little cheaper.
For sure.
Yeah.
That definitely saves a little bit of money. But there's a lot of people getting married in the winter.
Yeah.
Why? Just it's something they wanted to do. I don't know necessarily if anything is less expensive.
Yeah.
But it's definitely...
Yeah, you're sort of off season, I guess, maybe.
But everybody wants to have an exceptional wedding, right?
Yeah.
You always want to have something that was memorable, that everybody wants, had a great time, etc.
Cheap.
And just a bit of research that we did on this, the Wedding Bells magazine found out that the average Canadian couple spends... Well, I could make you guess how much, but I'm going to tell you. $30,717 on a wedding, including the honeymoon.
Oh, that's not bad.
Well, in that case. And Smart Bride Boutique said 76% of Canadian women feel that today's brides are pressured to have an extravagant wedding beyond their financial means. 76%.
Do you think it has a lot to do with age?
Well, but see, that comes back to me. That's all about marketing, right?
Yeah.
That's about marketing. That's about social media. That's about everything that brides see in those magazines.
Yeah.
That and all the all the stories around weddings that are maybe pressuring them to do these extravagant weddings. So some of the kind of do's and don'ts to make sure that your wedding is an extraordinary event, but not an extraordinary debt at the end of the day. And number one is establishing a budget. And the wedding experts, they call it white blindness. And the white blindness is basically buying your wedding without considering the price. You know, you're just going all in. And basically, the experts tell us it takes about 13 months to plan a proper wedding. And obviously, the first step is to determine exactly what you can comfortably afford and stick to the budget.
Yes.
Right? It's so easy to layer on all the things.
Kind of like a renovation.
Think you have to have.
Yeah.
Number two, the venue. The venue becomes almost always the largest and most expensive budget item.
Yeah.
So shop around for the best deals. Obviously, choosing the less expensive option might mean, you know, getting married in a reception hall with a less traditional setting, or a backyard, or a park, or a beach.
The Legion.
Yep.
But you can definitely save some money if it's the venue. Obviously, the guest list and how many people are going to be coming. And today, the wedding costs, the average Canadian wedding includes approximately 120 guests, which is almost exactly what we had at our wedding.
Yeah, that's, it sounds average.
Same with us, too, actually. Yeah.
It can be difficult, but keeping that guest list to lower, like 50 or so, will obviously significantly reduce your costs. And one of the best stories I ever heard was a parents who said, here's what we're going to do. Anybody that we invite to the wedding, we'll pay for. Anybody that you invite to the wedding, you pay for.
That's a good idea.
And that way, we'll all work out our budget, and we'll know exactly what we're going to pay.
That's
and sometimes
really
that means you might want to take, you can bring more and pay more, or you can bring less and pay less. The wedding day. So the wedding day, the most expensive days are which day?
I would guess Saturdays.
Saturday's the most expensive
summer
day.
Summer months.
So, but if you can do a Friday or a midweek or even a Sunday, you're going to save money right off the bat.
Just on your bar bill.
Just.
Yeah, they got to go to work the next
Tuesday
day.
Tuesday wedding.
Do it yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times sweat equity, whether it's renovating your place or whether it's a wedding, is going to reduce the overall cost, making your own invitations, doing your own table decorations, decorating the venue. Speaking with clients who had two weddings last year, two sons that got married, the husband and wife, they spent probably about 100 hours making a wooden centerpiece that held a candle for about 70 tables.
Yeah.
So, but the cost savings was probably about $4,000.
I know someone that did that too.
Yeah. And everybody got
made
to
their
take
own centerpieces.
Got to take them all home.
100 hours for $4,000. Nothing wrong with that.
Doing it, do without or do with friends. So something like a DJ or having somebody that you know who's a friend who's good at this is obviously going to save you some money, because it's not going to be all the professional costs associated with doing that. And another great tip is hiring a student. Hiring a student, you might hire somebody who's a culinary student to come in and do a special appetizer or a special dessert. You might hire a student who's focusing on photography and to come in and do your video or do your photographs. And as a new student, their cost is going to be very inexpensive, but hopefully I think you can get a really nice result as well. And finally, as Don was saying at the beginning, doing a destination wedding, right? And apparently about 15% of Canadian weddings do take place abroad or out of the country. And a quarter of those destination weddings fall from November to April.
Right.
So, and obviously with a destination wedding, the one thing is keeping that guest list small, because you're relying on your guests to pay for a significant cost to get there and enjoy the wedding along the way. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the wedding day, it's obviously everybody wants it to be extraordinary. They want it to be wonderful. They want it to be memorable. But from a financial planner's perspective, you also want it to be affordable. And so planning, 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 lots of ways to be creative, lots of ways to save costs on a wedding as
Should you assume that any money you're going to get from your guests will help pay for this?
Well, maybe that's a cultural thing to some extent, mm-hmm. but you know, some people just feel they need to give a gift, yeah. and some people Toaster feel they need to do make a monetary gift, yeah, and that's... some people need to equate what the plate costs are going to be. Yeah. There's all different levels of contribution from the guests. For
my 17 clocks I got from mine would say no.
You're always on time now. Think about that.
Still got three or four of them hanging around, don't you?
Got it.
All right, we have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Andy Lister and Don Fox have been here from IG Private Wealth Management. You can call now, leave a message. They'll return your call at 905-529-7165 and check out the website at andyanddon.com. Thank you, gentlemen. See you next
week.
Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.